can survive if I let you.
Conquering nevermore.
Let the new era begin. The era of the ECW.
Oh my god.
This is extreme.
Greetings and welcome to This is Extreme, an ECW history podcast. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to us since we've been back. I hope you enjoyed our last episode featuring ECW founder Todd Gordon. And I know I said on that episode I didn't know when I'd be back, right? It'd be a sporadic thing. I have decided, you know what? This is going to be an every other week thing. I'm going to put out This is Extreme on a regular basis. I'm enjoying it. I love ECW, love the topic. I want to talk history. I want to interview people. So we're going to do this every other week. So This is Extreme from this point moving forward will be an every other week release. So we hope you're happy with that. I'm very happy with our guest this week. We have ECW superstar C.W. Anderson on the show. We talk about his career, how he got into ECW, and all the trials, tribulations, and turmoil of being in ECW at the end of the company. So that is coming in a little bit. We have a lot of ECW-related things, though, that we can talk about that's happening out there in the world right now. The most prominent, probably, that everybody is discussing is that Rob Van Dam was on AEW Dynamite on August 2nd and August 9th. On August 9th, he wrestled Jack Perry, and man, he looked great. He looked like he hadn't lost a step. He hit all of his patented RVD spots. The crowd was behind him. Man, Rob just is spectacular, right? I mean, he is like, right now to me, the wrestler that time forgot. And he looks great, worked great. It was spectacular. It was really, really cool seeing RVD on a national television show wrestling a match. Came up short against Jack Perry, but hey, you know, it is what it is. But again, a lot of fun seeing Rob Van Dam on TV. Some upcoming merchandise type stuff. Rush Collectibles, the Ringmaster 2, Series 2, will feature Joel Gertner. They just recently announced that Gertner will be in the second line. This will be Joel Gertner's first action figure, so it'll be very, very cool. So watch that. Follow them on social media, Rush Collectibles, and keep your eye out for pre-orders coming from Joel Gertner. Zombie Sailor Toys has announced that the Sandman will be featured in a future series. He will be joining Sabu and Raven as ECW alumni who have been in his toy series. Sabu and Raven figures look spectacular. Cannot wait to see what the Sandman figure looks like. Zombie Sailor doing a lot of good stuff out there. Very cool for us ECW fans to see these figures coming out. Speaking of figures, Epic Toys has announced that their BWO figures will be available for purchase soon, and they will ship to those who have already pre-ordered. You got Nova, you've got Stevie, you got Meanie. It's three figures featuring the BWO. If you've pre-ordered them, yours will ship soon. And for others, the figures will be available from retailers very, very soon. So watch online, Epic Toys, for that. And, of course, as we talked a lot about last episode, remember that Todd Gordon's book, Todd is God, the Authorized Story of How I Created Extreme Championship Wrestling, is now available. It's at all major book retailers, including Amazon Online. So however you get your books, you can find it. It's a great book, as we talked about last week. I did my book review of it. Talked to Todd about the book. It was a spectacular. I highly advise everybody to get out there and read it. And for those of you who like audiobooks, there is an audiobook version that is now available that was narrated or spoken or recorded, I'm sorry, however you want to say it, by Sean Oliver, Todd's author, who put the book together and did a spectacular job. So if you're into audiobooks, would prefer to go that route, it is out there now. So look it up however you like it. Get your copy. Support this book. It is a great read. All right, so let's take a little break. And like I said, when we come back, we'll have an interview with C.W. Anderson, so stick around. Be sure to follow This is Extreme on all social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for ECW Pod. Be sure to follow us, keep up to date, and join in the discussions. We want to hear your feedback. So find us on all the social media platforms and join the revolution.
This is Extreme.
All right, and here we are on This is Extreme. And we're joined today by former ECW superstar C.W. Anderson. C.W., how are you?
I'm fantastic, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on. And I'm going to talk to you a little about everything here. And let's get into it. Let's start where we all want to start. When did you first become a fan of wrestling? What's your first memories?
Most of the interviews, it's the same thing where I hated professional wrestling when I was a kid. I'm not going to say I didn't hate it. I just wasn't a fan. And my brother was a huge fan. And I want to say 1984, 1985, the match is on YouTube. We live outside of Raleigh. And the NWA, of course, was huge. And every Saturday morning, it came on 10, 11 o'clock after Looney Tunes, which was our favorite cartoon. And he watched it. I didn't. And he told me one day, he said, Chris, just sit here with me and watch this one match. He said, if you don't like it, I'll never ask you again. Just sit here and watch it with me. So I was like, all right, I'll sit there and watch it with you. And again, this match is on YouTube. It was the Rock and Roll Express, who had just came into NWA. They were fighting Ivan Koloff and Crusher Khrushchev for the belts. And the finish was Ricky Morton, victory rolled Uncle Ivan. And people understand the reason I call him Uncle Ivan was my partner and a lot of my close friends were trained by Ivan Koloff. And they always called me like a quote unquote bastard child of Ivan's because I would go and work out at his school every now and then and got really close to him. So everybody in this area called him Uncle Ivan. So with that being said, he victory rolled him 1-2-3 Rock and Roll Express, new NWA champs. And my brother and I was hooked. We were jumping around because it was the Americans defeating the Russians. And I was 13, 14, something like that. And I was hooked. Never thought I would end up being one because I was a baseball prodigy, really good in playing baseball, got drafted, or was going to get drafted, I should say. And so wrestling was kind of put by the wayside. Like in high school, a bunch of us kids, there was a guy that was an independent wrestler that had a ring in the backyard and we would go over and roll around and he would teach us things like that. And only did it for like a year before my baseball coach made me quit because he didn't want my baseball career getting ruined. So.
Yeah, that was actually the next thing I was going to talk to you about. You were quite the baseball player as a kid, which I heard that you got drafted by the Padres. Is that correct?
1989. Yeah. Right before the Latin explosion of catchers, because you know, you had in the 80s, there was Tony Pena and then my idol, the guy actually who I have a tattoo on my leg of, is Benito Santiago. I've always idolized Benito because the one thing I had was a really, really strong arm. And, you know, throwing out base runners was easy for me because of my arm. Actually, when the Padres scouted, they were scouting a pitcher of my the guy that was pitching for us in the All-Star games during the summer of my senior year. And I was throwing from my knees harder to second base than he could throw standing up. Right? I mean, they clocked me at 90. So I picked guys off third, second, first. It didn't matter. I just had a strong arm. I was your typical white catcher. I didn't have great speed. I had a really good bat. But my arm was my show-off point. And I was my parents, especially my mom, was a mother hen. And talked me out of signing after they had offered, and it was a shitty contract by today's standards. You know, again, it was only like $22,000 plus a $2,000 salary bonus to go to rookie ball. And then a guy before that, the year before that I played ball with, he got signed by the Padres with the same kind of shit money, and he didn't make it. He damn near starved to death. He said so. Turned it down, went to college, blew my arm out, showing off, and just kind of. Baseball never really took off after that.
Yeah, yeah. So you still a baseball fan? Who's your team?
I'm really not, man. The older I've gotten, I don't watch baseball hardly anymore. I don't watch basketball. Ever since for basketball, I was a huge Michael Jordan fan. I mean, like, obsessed. Mm-hmm, right. And when Jordan kind of quit, and then, you know, this whole new generation, especially with that goof LeBron James, I just don't watch basketball. I'll watch football in the winter just to have something to do on Sundays. But I don't really watch most baseball anymore. I played softball for the longest time up until about 4 or 5 years ago. And it wasn't that my health or anything just kept me from playing. It was just my time with wrestling. It's almost like I got busier the longer my career has gone on.
Yeah. I'm still a huge baseball fan. I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan. being from the Midwest.
I like the Cardinals back when I was going to school and stuff like that. And, you know, of course, being I was always a Padres fan because they're the one that drafted me, you know, Tony Gwynn. And it's crazy. I'm looking at stuff now, the stats of Tony Gwynn and Ricky Henderson and Cal Ripken Jr. and those guys. Those stats, like I was looking at one today with Tony Gwynn, just like him, he struck out none against Pedro Martinez, Greg Smoltz, Tom Glavine. They faced him over 300 times and he never struck out. You know, somebody that, there's those stats. That's what got me hooked, you know, with baseball was the stats for it.
Yeah, I think Tony Gwynn's probably the best hitter I've ever seen in my lifetime. He's
in mine too. It's, you know, to me, I play this video game, Major League Baseball, Major League The Show, and they said when Tony Gwynn gets up the bat, they said the ball basically stood still for him.
So, well, anyway, that led to you end up being trained at some of the WCW power plant, right? How did that happen? And what was that like?
The first, you know, I started, this December 4th will make my 30th year. So December 4th, 93 is my first match. I was never really formally trained until 97 or 98 when I went through the power plant. Everything else was just kind of learned in the ring, being in locker rooms with Ivan Koloff, you know, and Wahoo McDaniel a little bit, Jimmy Valiant, Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, those guys. So I would learn sitting there listening to them and then getting in the ring at the training school. Like I said, there was really nobody there. They had a guy there training, but he was a local indie guy. So it's kind of like nowadays, the local indie guys that never been anywhere, never done anything, training people. So you really don't learn like you do when you learn by people that know what they're talking about. So I ended up training two guys that ended up going through the power plant and making it in 97. One of them turned out to be Raven's sign guy, Lodi. And around the fall, the early winter of 97, they messaged me and said, you know, you need to come and try out at the power plant. You're just spinning your wheels here in North Carolina. You're not really doing anything. Just come and try out. So I went through those 3 days of hell, and it was 3 days of hell to get through that tryout. And once I got through it and came back and started learning under them, so under Sarge, it was almost like Sarge put me under his wing. I was the only one that had some experience, and my buddy Kurt Toad that was there, we'd go wrestle each other on the weekends, come back and show Sarge our match, and he would sit there and critique it and give us things to do the next match. I remember one time we had too many rope spots and too many lockups, so our goal, our next match, we went 25 minutes, no lockups, no rope spots to be able to tell a story. It was things like that that Sarge would tell us to do. So it was at that time, the power plant was unorganized. Jody Hamilton was running it, and it wasn't very organized. It wasn't organized at all. Like, my breaking point was because you had the Natural Born Thrillers. You had Lash LaRue, Elix Skipper, Mike Sanders, Chuck Palumbo, guys like that that were there training under contract. And then Sarge was having me work out with them and teach them stuff. I'm there to get learned as well, but he had me working out with them, teach them stuff as well. And all great guys, every one of them, Elix, Lash, Mike, all those guys are phenomenal. Think the world of them. And one day, J.J. Dillon and Paul Orndorff came because they were agents there at WCW, and they wanted to see what, you know, what kind of talent they had at the power plant. They had no idea. So they were there. Brad Armstrong was there. First time I'd ever met Brad Armstrong. And they had us all square off and work a match. Sorry, my computer shutting down. Work a match. And I got to work with Toad. We did, you know, our crazy, because we were big fans of ECW. You know, that's typical ECW match. He would do a pullover, hurricane, or shit like that, that had the boys popping. And, you know, anyway, we got done with it. And Brad Armstrong, he literally said, he said, guys, that was some straight effing ECW stuff right there. He said, that was awesome. He loved it. And JJ and Paul came up to me and told me, you know, you're pretty good in the ring, but WCW is a cosmetic company. They're looking for a look, and we really don't think you will have any kind of look to be able to make it here at WCW. You're more than welcome to stay here at the power plant, but we don't think we'll ever have anything for you. And that was really a shot to the gut. That, because even though I was wrestling as CW Anderson, I kind of kept that a little quiet because I hadn't really met Arn. You know, I'd gotten permission from Gene, through Gene, to use the Anderson name. So I hadn't met Arn. I haven't met Ole. So I kind of kept that quiet. And then that was a disheartening thing to hear that from them. So one day, my buddy, that Kurt, he got a tryout at ECW. And it was a favor from Lodi through Raven, through Tommy Dreamer, to give him a tryout. We were in South Carolina wrestling the night before, and we were wrestling the Public Enemy. He got a tryout down in Georgia. They were in Georgia. So I rode down with him. He got the tryout, and I really didn't want to go. I had just started seeing somebody. I wanted to be with her. And, you know, he drugged me down there and said, "You're going." And he said, "Look," he said, "Steve Carino's there. You and Steve are good friends. Hang out with him, do a little politicking, say hello, get your name out there, even if you don't get in the ring." So I went, and he did his tryout. He was working out with Angel Medina from the Baldies, who ended up being the Baldies. And his tryout was over with, and Nova was running the tryout, and he leaned through the ropes, and he said, "Chris, you got your gear?" I said, "Yeah, it's in the car." So I ran, threw my gear on, jumped in the ring with Simon Diamond, who I knew as well, did a little 5-minute match for him. Nova loved my timing and stuff. I get out, and I hear this guy tell Fonzie to get the ball guy back in the ring. And Fonzie looks at me and goes, "Daddy, he wants you back in the ring." I'm like, "Who?" I look over there, and it was Paul Heyman. Mm-hmm. So Paul got me back in the ring. I worked out for like the next hour with guys being thrown at me. Got done. Went in the back and was sitting there wiping the sweat and blood off of me from where I was bumping so hard. I had like kind of spitting up blood, and the bathroom door opens, and in walks Paul Heyman. He walked right straight up to me, sticks his hand out, and goes, "Hey, I'm Paul Heyman. It's nice to meet you." I said, "Hey, Paul," I said, "my name's Chris Wright. It's a pleasure." He said, he asked me how long I've been wrestling, where I was wrestling at. I told him I was down at the power plant. He asked me if I was on contract. I said, "No." And I said, "They told me I didn't have what it takes to be at WCW. He said, "Well, what's your wrestling name?" I said, "CW Anderson." And he goes, in classic Paul voice, he goes, "I knew it." He says, "You look like Arn. You have the left punch, the spine buster." He said, "Do not leave before I speak to you at the end of the night." I said, "Yes, sir." Show's getting ready to start. Jim Molyneux comes up to get me because he lets me stay backstage. And I'll go, and like I've told this story so many times, everything seems surreal now. I go in the back in the locker room, and he's sitting there with Vito La Grossa, Danny Dorn, and Roadkill, introduces me to him, says, "You're tagging with Vito, your third match, welcome to ECW." That's kind of how I got my job. He made Danny and Roadkill put 3 finishes on me to pin me, and kind of the rest was history with that.
Yeah. Well, early in ECW, you were part of the New Dangerous Alliance with Louis Dangerously. What did you think of that coming into ECW, and what was that like for you?
I loved being with Lou and Bill. You know, the early days of ECW, I would never find out who I was wrestling, even if I wrestled to like 10 minutes before the match. One night Tommy threw Bill and I together, and we had some great chemistry. And then they started putting us together, and we started getting over as a tag team. Then when the Dudleys left, one night we were in a bar in Atlanta. There was a place called the Old Dungeon. It was a hotel. It was called the Dungeon. And Lou and I traveled together because I rode with Steve Carino, Jack Victory, and of course, Louis Dangerously. We were all a traveling clique along with Dreamer and Francine. And Lou's sitting there, and he's like, "Man," he said, "I don't really know what I want to do." He said, "I'd love to manage you and Bill." I was like, "Dude, that'd be fantastic." So he went to Tommy, and they came up with the idea of him basically ripping off Paul because he looked similar to Paul. And they come up with the whole Dangerous Alliance thing, and, you know, Bill being Bobby Eaton, me being Arn, him being Paul Lee. And we started out as comedy sort of, and then we started getting over as a really good tag team. But I loved working with them. It was so much fun. Every night it was Danny and Roadkill, Nova and Chetty, Nova and Kid Cash. And got to a point where we would just could put a match together in 5 minutes that we were working because we were working so much, you know, 4 nights a week, 3 nights a week, pay-per-views. Those were a lot of fun. It's one of those now you look back on it when people say those were the good days. You really don't know the good days until they're gone.
Yeah, that's true. And then after that, though, you were with Simon Diamond, Johnny Swinger. Mm-hmm. You said you knew Simon. You went back with him. What did you think of that? I mean, Johnny Swinger's a character, man. He's still out there in Impact and here lately and everything. He's a lot of fun. What was that like working with those guys?
Swinger was at the power plant when I was there, you know, way before ECW. But Swinger's Swinger's the type of guy, he's very quiet and to himself. And if you don't know him, you 100% think he's an asshole. Because I did. And there was a lot of the few guys there that didn't really know Swinger that thought he was like that. But once he came to ECW and I got to know Swinger, he is one of the nicest and best guys out. An amazing athlete, great professional wrestler. And tagging with them, you know, Paul wanted to start pushing me singles because I was starting to get over. So he wanted to turn me, put me in singles, especially when Lance Storm was leaving. And he put me with those guys. And it was great. They were the tag team. I was the singles. And, you know, we were an elite unit. I even said that in a promo that we, you know, calling ourselves the elite. And that was 99. So I love tagging with them, you know, yeah. Six man's. You know, singles with them when they were doing tag, they were a lot of fun. And I learned honing my promo skills because I was scared to death to talk, you know, on the microphone and petrified to talk in front of a camera. And I remember my first live promo was at the ECW arena. And it was the night that, you know, because Simon and Swinger had that carnival faction with them. And just the night that they turned on them and Danny and Roadkill came in and then Bobby Eaton came in and he and I squared off. So my first live promo was in front of the ECW arena. And I remember I was shaking in my boots before I cut the promo, but you know, they were a lot of fun to be with.
Yeah. And during this whole time, you were on TNN, I mean, national TV. What was that like? Could you tell that your exposure was going up? I mean, were you getting recognized a little more out there? What was it like being on national TV every week?
You know, most of the time they were calling me the king of hardcore TV because every week I was on hardcore TV, which was their syndicated show. You know, I wasn't every now and then I'd get on the national, on the big show. It was, I think with Super Crazy or something like that, but I could tell, the first notice that holy shit, people know who I am, was in Chicago. We came out for a dark match and this is way before the Dangerous Alliance. Bill and I were the first two to walk through the curtain. And as soon as we walked through the curtain, they were booing us. And Bill looked at me and goes, holy hell, they know who we are. but then it got to the point where, yeah, you go places and people would know. I'm one of the first pay-per-views, or I was getting ready to leave for a pay-per-view. My first wife and I were walking around a Walmart. And I remember going into the audio section. And she leaned in and said, this kid's been following us around the entire night. Please speak to him. And I turned around, he's there with a notebook and he's shaking to speak to me because most of the time, you know, back then it was so kayfabe and no internet. The guy they saw on TV is the guy they think who it is. Yeah. And that's not me. Even, you know, last night we did a show right down the road from you in Nashville. And I did, my fiance Brittany did something really, really nice for the promoter's family who their house burnt down. And he called her because I forgot where he lived, but they live out of state. He called her and said, hey, CW and his fiance got you a care package, blah, blah, blah. She goes, the wrestler CW Anderson, he goes, yeah. She went, I used to hate him on TV. She says, I guess I got to like him now. He goes, Mom, he's a really nice guy. So, yeah, it was just when people was like, hey, I'm doing my job if you hated me. But
that's right.
Once when Simon and Swinger and then started working with Dreamer and those guys, then I could tell that people were starting to recognize because, you know, I would not come out. I had my own little section of guys that their gimmick was they would get a pizza box and write, you know, do CW. And I had the CW hands up. And I remember I worked super crazy at the arena and I let him put me, Frankenstein me through a table on the floor. Come back in, finish me off. He gets the win and he goes to the back and then I get up. They're chanting CF and Dub. That's what they started chanting my name, going CF and Dub with my hands up. And I was still kind of with the Dangerous Alliance then. And Lou gets in and he goes, dude, you're effing over now to get that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you were with ECW right till the end. So when did you start having a feeling that things were kind of going in a bad direction? And things weren't going good, and then the end might be coming. Did you get that vibe before the end came?
I didn't. I was oblivious to. You would hear the rumblings, and you'd hear, you know, Franny talking about it, Dreamer kind of talking about it, Lude, everybody, you know, in the last 6 months or so. And it was always the typical, the whole time I was there, why we're not getting paid this week. Paul would have that conversation on a monthly basis of why our checks weren't coming in. One excuse he gave us was the FedEx hub blew or caught on fire and burnt down. You know, it was stuff like that on a monthly basis that he would tell us. But I was oblivious, and I was also, I didn't want it to be true because I kept saying ECW can't go out of, this is ECW. It can't go out of business. It just can't. That's almost like thinking people would never thought WCW would have went out of business because it's always been around. And even though ECW was only short lived, you know, 5 or 6 years or however long it was around, you just didn't think because of the TV exposure and how the cult following we had.
Go ahead. No, I was just gonna say, did you notice Paul Heyman starting to check out, and when Tommy Dreamer, you know, kind of kept things afloat? I mean, did you notice that happening?
Oh yeah, we definitely noticed that. And then the thing we always was told, you know, it was a few years ago, I got in this kind of Twitter beef with Paul because he got pissed off because I kept saying that he was, you know, I said that he was in California filming the movie Rollerball instead of trying to get us on USA Network like he said. It was the alleged thing that he was supposedly doing. And I never came up with that. I would have never known. That's what the people hired in me was saying that was going on. Paul never was in you. Paul always said, I'm in California trying to get a deal with you guys on USA Network. And what we were told was he was out there just filming the movie Rollerball. Allegedly, I don't know. But you did notice when Paul wasn't there, there was always some kind of excuse, but Tommy was the, you know, the foundation, the backbone, keeping it afloat that.
Yeah. So outside
it was not until Paul showed up on Raw with Jim Ross at the commentary that I knew it was dead and it was over. Because Massacre on 34th Street was December. That's the night that Tommy put me over when I put him in through the table backwards. And Paul got on his knees in front of me as I was sitting at the chair afterwards and wanted to know if I was leaving him to go to WCW because that's the rumor he had heard. And I told him no, that I was, you know, I was loyal to him and Tommy for giving me the job. And I would never leave him as long as he wanted me. And then he told me after my I Quit match the rumor was I was getting the television belt, then the heavy belt. And I was because I was never on contract, but my contract was coming. My contract and the television belt was coming at Living Dangerously, which was the pay-per-view I had to get to his charge.
Yeah. So you said you had the Twitter thing with Paul. Have you spoke to Paul besides the Twitter thing since the ECW?
No. Well, since ECW, I would see him like when I was at did that little Disney version of ECW.
Right.
I would speak to him, and you know, he would tell me here and there, I'm going to start pushing you. I'm going to do this. I'm going to start pushing you. And I was kind of checked out when he told me that Vince wanted to change my name because I hated being there. It was not ECW. It wasn't what I was promised. It wasn't what any of us was promised. So once we found out that Vince took it back over and he started implementing his own guys, me, myself, Francine, and the others were just totally checked out. I didn't want even a paycheck. The pay was shitty. I was actually losing money because I was on the road. Having to pay for everything but my flight.
Yeah. So you said that you weren't getting paid. I mean, so you experienced that, the checks not clearing, not getting paid. Did you ever get anything? I mean, there that you're owed or technically are you still owed money?
I'm still owed money. It was I forgot the bankruptcy settlement or whatever it was. Yeah. And it was like pennies on the dollar. If you sign here, you get that. And it wasn't even worth it. Yeah. I'm not owed nothing like RVD and Carino and Jerry Lynn, those guys, because, you know, they were making a few thousand dollars a week and I was only making $200 a night at the end. But I've never paid that back.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned that you mentioned you being slated for the TV title. I'd heard that too. I heard that that literally the next pay-per-view that you were going to get it. They were going to, I think, what, Rhino holding both belts at the time? Were they going to vacate the TV?
Yes.
And I heard
it, me and Nova.
You're right, and I heard it was going to go on you. So, I mean, was that told to you, hard facts? I've always heard that rumor.
Yeah, that was the thing that was coming, and then I was being groomed to be the next heavy. Now, I don't know if I was the next heavy champ, but the heavyweight belt was in my line of sight after the TV belt, because I was, and again, this was coming from other people. I was getting so over. I mean, there was a point that Tommy was thinking about turning me babyface because I was getting so over with the fans. You know, after the I Quit match, all 3,000 at the Hammerstein Ballroom were giving me a standing ovation, chanting the CF and Dub afterwards. Because every time I was getting the appreciate, because you know there was even an article, and again it was a wrestling article that was written about me where, and I still have it, says you can't spell ECW without CW, and it was slated that no matter where you were at, CW Anderson didn't have a bad match. He was always going to give you everything, and it was always going to be something good. So, and that's what I prided myself on. But yeah, that the TV belt was next, which would have been great. I mean, I would have loved that. You know, it had a great history with that, and then onto the heavy belt to be able to carry that company. I loved it. I would have loved it.
Yeah, I always thought you and the TV belt made sense, right? I mean, especially with the Anderson thing, right? Arn was always known. I always thought, man, I always thought, why didn't CW have a run with this? Because it just made sense to me.
Yeah, it was coming. It was headed that way. It just unfortunate that DCW ended before that. It was like my run didn't get started soon enough.
Yeah. And I don't recall the timetable about the action figures. So did you miss out on all that? Did you come in after the action figures were done?
I was there right at the tail end of it. Like they had already, I don't know how they set up for it, but I was there. It's like the video game. I just did make the video game, but I was at the end for the action figure. I think Carino was one of the last ones as well, because he was 6 months before I was. And we know for the video game, Bill and I had to sign our rights away, saying we couldn't ask for royalties of it just to be on it.
Ah, that's wild. I always wonder. I always thought that was right there where you didn't get a figure, but I always thought maybe you just missed when they stopped.
Yeah, I did. I was right there at the end. I came in a little bit too late with that.
Yeah. Well, and then that's
the story of my career.
Step behind, huh? Step behind.
Yeah.
So what is as you look back on it now? What's your best memory of working with ECW?
Being part of that family, being part of that group, saying that I am one of the originals, that's a great honor. I think my best memory is possibly the I Quit. Here we are, you know, the I Quit happened January 7th, 2001, which is literally, it was my 30th birthday. My birthday is January 7th. So 2001 was my 30th birthday. So have that match that you're kind of known for on your 30th birthday. There's so many special moments at ECW, so many fans, I mean, friend, family and things like that. But just being part of that group and, you know, having special matches with those people, and then the I Quit with Tommy was special to me.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've done a lot of things, but do you feel like the ECW times what made your career? I mean, put you on the map. Do you think absolutely. It would have been as prolonged without ECW?
I don't think so. I don't think I would have. I don't know where I would have ended up, because, you know, at the time, up until recently, you had to be a body guy. You had to look the part. And I never was. Even when they got me signed for ECW and for WWE, Tommy goes, you know, Vince is a mark for people that are tall and muscular. So you need to get some steroids. It's going to make you tall. Because being just 6 foot in that company is really not going to cut it. And I was never really, you know, in ECW, I averaged between 240 and God, I got it to 280 one time. And that's when Paul told me I need to lose weight, but I never was really in shape. I mean, Jesus Christ, now I'm 210 pounds.
Yeah.
Best shape right now I've ever been in. And I feel fantastic. I don't know. There's so many things I wish I could have done different back then. You just don't know.
Yeah. Well, hindsight's 2020. That's what they always say. Tell me on a side note, the CW hand motion, the hand sign. Who was that all you? When did you start doing that? When did that come into be part of your character?
A little bit before ECW, I used to run around when Steve Corino and I was on the Indies. We run around with a guy called Tom Cassati. If you're up in the northeastern area, you know who Tom Cassati is. And he always come out holding up the C. Mm-hmm. That was his gimmick. He had a little faction, you know, and Tom Cassati, he held up the C. Well, one day, and I'm a huge old school hip hop rap R&B fan. So I'm a big Tupac mark. And there was one of Tupac's albums where he was doing the West Side W on his temple.
Right. Yeah.
And somehow it just hit me with that. And then I saw the W, and then I was like, with the Tom's C, and because they always said you need a hook. Mm-hmm. And that's where I come up with it at, was the Tom Cassidy and Tupac with the CW hands.
That's pretty wild. That's quite the duo to get that inspired by.
I know. It was an odd couple of those two. Yeah. Need it work. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, it was a hook. Well, it set you apart. Right. I mean, amongst other things, but it was, no one else was kind of doing that kind of thing in ECW like you were. I mean, you know, everybody had their pose and their, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was different for you. So I think it helped set you apart. And people think CW Anderson, that comes to mind.
Yeah, that's the one thing they know is the hands. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So who are you still close with from ECW? Is there anybody you regularly communicate with, still friends with?
Lou and I speak every now and then. Like, I just saw Dreamer last weekend. He and I messaged each other back and forth. He's gone through some hardships, and I messaged him over that with the loss of his mother. When I went through a really bad divorce a few years ago, and it was even more than a divorce, he was on the phone with me constantly because I was in a very dark place. Francine and I are still really close. Jack Victor and I are still really close. I'll talk to Swinger every now and then. Danny Doran, I'll speak to here and there. Roadkill. Angel from the Baldies, I'll speak to. Tony DeVito, like year before last, whenever it was, I went up to Queens and did a little signing at the Wrestling Universe. And it was me and Jerry Lynn, Sandman, the Baldies, H.C. Loke. And it was like, you know, some of us hadn't been together in 20 years. And it's like we picked up right where we left off. Mikey Whitbread, those guys, people like that. It's just a constant communication, you know, here and there.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you a question. I asked Todd Gordon, and then you can give whatever answer you want. You step on an elevator, and the door is closed, and you look over, and it's just you and Paul Heyman. No cameras, nobody around, just you and him. What are you saying to him?
First off, I ask him how he's been, okay. How he's doing. I don't think, even though he and I went at it, you know, that little spat we had, I still respect Paul because mm-hmm. Paul took a chance on me. Paul saw something in me that nobody else did, and, you know, give me the confidence to hone my craft and be that enforcer, CW Anderson, that, you know, he put me on the map, him and Tommy. I would never bring that up unless he brought it up, and I would never disrespect Paul unless he disrespected me. And I don't see that happening. No. Even when I saw him years after ECW, it was when he saw me, it was a big hug. Because again, no matter what was said, without Paul Heyman giving me a chance, there is no CW Anderson like that.
That's good. I mean, it's always good to keep things positive and not, I mean, if the past is the past, what are you going to do now? You can't change it. You can't change what happened, how it ended up. So
can't change what the only thing I ever would have wanted or in all of us from ECW was for him to actually set us all down, because he was our leader and we would have followed him into hell. And most of us probably still would follow him into hell. Would just tell us that it was over. He just never did.
Yeah. Yeah. I can feel that. I mean, that makes sense. So, well, CW, thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking to us. Maybe we'll have you back on another time.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So how can people follow you, like on social media or wherever, keep up with your appearances and what you're doing and everything? You have some outlets out there for them?
Everything is at ECW Anderson, Twitter, okay. Instagram, Facebook, everywhere. And if you do message me, I always reply to you.
Well, that's right. You're still working in the Carolinas. Like I said, you know, I've seen you around. I saw very you. Nice. I wasn't at the show last night in Nashville, like you said, but I was at the one a couple months ago. Saw you there.
Right.
Yep. So, still out there doing your thing, teaming with Preston Quinn a lot, right? Doing the Extreme Horseman.
Yep. Still and, trying to keep the Extreme Horseman alive, the name that Dusty Rhodes gave us.
That's right. Do you still talk to Steve Corino? You and Corino still close?
No. I don't know why. We just kind of lost communications a few years ago, and we've never gotten back in touch with each other.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing his backstage stuff at WWE's, you know, staying busy.
Yeah,
I mean,
really happy for him. I'm glad he's still employed there. And because that's Steve. That's all Steve's ever wanted to be, as a wrestler or involved in wrestling. So couldn't be more happy for him.
Yeah, I've always been a big Carino fan. Always liked the guy. Yeah. Liked his work. Liked his approach. And like you said, I'm still, if you and him bumped into each other, I'm sure it'd still be like, you know, like ECW days. You'd probably pick right back up and like your best friends.
Yeah, he and there's nobody closer than me and him in this business. We know everything about each other. We've been there, done that, and gotten a t-shirt. So,
yeah,
right. I still love him. He's still considered my best friend. So,
yeah, well, I appreciate you. I was always a big fan of UCW. And I've always held true that ECW gets pigeonholed. It's just hardcore. It's just violence. There's a lot of facets to it and a lot of different angles. And I think you showed that. I mean, you were a wrestler in ECW and succeeded and went over. So I think you're a big proponent of showing that ECW had a lot of sides. And,
yes, it did.
And, you know, I think, it gets pigeonholed a lot, but there was a lot of facets to ECW and a little something for everybody. And
we're still talking about.
That's right. It was groundbreaking, right? I mean, it shaped wrestling, redirection wrestling, and you were a big part of that. And so I appreciate your time and coming on and talking to us. Like I said, we'll get back in touch in the near future and do it again.
Sounds good, Dad. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Support This Is Extreme and buy the This Is Extreme shirt. Show the world that you are part of the revolution and that you support our podcast and the history of ECW. Go to tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt and buy yours today.
All right, and there you have it. Thanks to C.W. Anderson for coming on This Is Extreme and talking to me. Lots of great stories there. Lots of information, particularly on the end of ECW. What a great interview, and we'll have C.W. back in the future to talk a little more, right? Go a little more in depth on some things, get a little more stories, maybe some show match-specific stuff. We'll talk to him again, but it's good to kind of hear an overview there in his stance and his opinion and what he experienced at the end of ECW. Again, C.W. is out there working, so check him out if you're in the area. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you choose to listen on. And make sure you give us a share, a like, a rating, review, all those things. It helps with the algorithm in these podcast platforms for us to be found when people are listening to other podcasts. Help us network. Help us spread the word. And one way you can do that is following us on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look at ECW Pod. Very easy to find. We're on all those. We post lots of cool things, birthdays, shows, title change histories, lots of cool stuff going up there. So support the show and ECW that way. You can find me personally on Twitter at The Dave Dynasty. And one way you can support the show financially is if you would buy an This Is Extreme show t-shirt. Wow, got fumbled on my words there. If you'd like to buy a shirt, go to tinyurl.com/CW pod shirt, ECW pod shirt. Man, I am having trouble. If you'd like to buy a shirt, go to tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt. There you go. The link is in the show notes to make it easy for you. So support us and help us out that way. We'll be back in 2 more weeks with another episode of This Is Extreme. I'll have another guest on to interview to talk about their experience with ECW. Lots of great things lined up coming in the future. So make sure you subscribe so you do not miss an episode. But until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and be sure to keep it extreme.